You are listening to The Perks of Being a Book Lover, a show featuring two friends who've been in the same book club for almost 20 years.
I'm Carrie. My co-host Amy is perhaps a saint because she puts up with my grumpy contrariness. While she is enthusiastic and eager to give more, I'm standing on the sidelines, digging in my heels to always do less.
I'm Amy, and I don't even know how to respond to that. My co-host, Carrie, I've known her a long time, and she consistently dazzles me with her people skills and her ever sunny disposition. And sometimes I even make her go out of her house, but I didn't this Monday when I tried to get her to go to a book talk.
Yep.
No way.
Yep, not happening. It's a Monday. Basically, we're opposites, but we find common ground on our shared love of books. Each week, we chat about what we're reading with each other and sometimes a special guest.
We also dabble in other topics like books in the news, recent book-inspired films, our TBR counts, and general things that tease our brains. We're glad you're listening. So this week is a book rec episode, and we're focusing on books from small presses. We all know the big publishers, right? Simon & Schuster, Penguin Random House, HarperCollins, Macmillan, and Hachette are the big five. But what are small presses?
Well, small presses make considerably less money than the big places, but they also tend to cater to niche markets, which means you're likely to get some interesting, quirky reads from them that you won't see coming out of the bigger imprints. Any number of our past guests have published books by small presses or university presses.
And actually, some of my favorite books from the last several years have been from small presses. So I'm excited about this episode today. Of course, sometimes what seems like a small press is actually a small section or an imprint of a larger outfit. For example, a book I thought about mentioning for this episode was published by Katherine Tegan Books. Sounds like a small press, right? Nope, it's an imprint of HarperCollins. So we may talk about that a little bit. It's deceiving. It's deceiving.
Yeah, it can be.
But first, I want to mention that I will be doing my monthly Insta Live with Jennifer Calieras from Books Are My People on March 7th at 12 noon Eastern Standard Time. Yeah, you can watch it on our Insta feed then, or it'll appear up in our feed for anyone to watch at any time. So I hope you will tune in. You'll hear about my favorite book of February.
Okay.
So I think that's the only bookkeeping news I have at the moment.
I'm gonna give an update on my cat.
Yes, how Flipper.
took her to the vet, and I was sure she had like an ingrown nail, something like that. And the vet comes out and says, "Does she go outside?" I said, "No, she never goes outside." She said, "Do you have chemicals laying around the house?" I'm like, "No."
It's like Breaking Bad, right?
Right. Yes. Bad or yes. That's right. What, besides the meth lab in our basement? No. I said, no, we do not. And she said the whole pad of her back left paw is burnt. Is it possible she could have like jumped up on the stove? I said, that is the only thing possible out of the two things that you've given me. So apparently she either stepped on a, you know, the stove when it was cooling down or maybe on a hot pan. I really have no idea what happened. But anyway, she got her foot bandaged up, brought her home. She immediately pulled that off. And then I had to put her right back in the car and take her back to the vet where she got a new bandage and the cone of shame. And they gave her morphine, which I thought, surely morphine will make her sleepy and mellow. And no, it made her freaked out, her eyes, psychopath. Her eyes were like as dilated as a cat's eyes can be. And she was just restless and agitated and very unhappy. Yesterday morning, she was still weird. And she managed to, we have this small area of our basement that's unfinished. And she managed to get between the concrete outer wall and the drywall, and she was hiding in there. Fortunately, she is a little more normal now. She's actually calm enough that she can lie down. So I'm seeing a light at the end of the psychotic cat tunnel, but I take her back today to get a new bandage put on. And who knows? I mean, she's really pissed off at me. That's all I can say. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's probably like if somebody gave me some crazy drug without my knowledge, you know, I'd be like, what's going on? What, you know,
she's tripping.
She is on a bad, bad trip. So the cat's fine, but that was the problem. It wasn't a nail at all. Her nail is fine.
And I was positive that she had ripped her nail out. So we were both wrong.
We were both wrong.
So. All right. Well, what you been watching?
So this past weekend we watched Maestro, which is about Leonard Bernstein and his wife and their relationship. That's on Netflix. And I mean, we liked it, but compared to the other films I've seen that are up for Academy Awards, it wasn't my favorite.
But this one has Bradley Cooper and
Carey Mulligan. Yeah. I mean, I thought they did, you know, they were good performances. Their whole relationship was a little unusual. Yeah. And I was just like, we finished The Changeling, which is on Apple TV. And that's based on the book by Victor Laval. And from what I've read, the story is supposed to be told over two seasons. Yeah. And all I can say is that better happen.
Oh.
Because this season one does not have, like, it's a total cliffhanger. It's totally, you get no resolution.
Oh.
So I'm going to be really upset if there's not the second season, which plays out the rest of the story.
Wow. Yeah, you better hope that they're going to do it. Or Carrie is going to be majorly grumpy and pissed about
That's right.
And nobody wants that.
And they're going to hear, it's like Festivus. I've got some problems with you people and you're going to hear about it.
Okay, well, you're not selling it to me now. Now I'm like, well, I'm not going to watch any more of it unless they come out with a second season.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we finished it and I was like, is that it? Really? That's it?
Let me ask you this. Now, you have read the book. Would it have seemed like a cliffhanger had you not read the book? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, is it because you know too much?
No. Like, I think...
Okay. It would have been a cliffhanger for anybody.
Yeah, because everything is really, like, totally left up in the air. I think you'd be even more upset, actually, because at least if you read the book, you know that it doesn't end there. Mm. You know that there's more, you know, something else is going to happen. But if you haven't read the book, I would think that you would be even more like, what?
I hate it when they do things like that. I hate it when they have cliffhangers like that. And then, you know, sometimes they don't come back. Mm-hmm. You know, they might get canceled. And it's right. Like, well, just finish up the damn story. And then if you want to have a second season and, you know, have writers make up stuff, I guess. Well, you know, that's up to them and Victor Laval. But
right.
I mean, can they make a whole new season out of the stuff that, you know, that they didn't include? I don't know.
I don't know. It's been a while since I read it, but I really hope, if nothing else, I hope that even if they don't get picked up for a second season, I hope they do like a, here's the ending, you know, like a 90 minute, here's the ending thing, because I did like it. And I want to see like, okay, how do they tie all these strings together? I want some resolution, even though technically I have resolution from the book, but I want the TV resolution.
Yeah.
Well, what have you been watching?
This has been kind of a rabbit hole. Okay. So my husband wanted to watch this show. It's totally not in my wheelhouse. It's about space and space travel. It's called For All Mankind. It's also on Apple Plus. But it's sort of an alternative history of the space program. Like, what would have happened had the United States continued sending manned flights on the moon and even, you know, and beyond, right?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of stopping. And so at first, the first couple episodes didn't wow me because it's set in like 1969. And, you know, it seems like there's a bunch of dudes, all these astronauts, and the astronauts are kind of like badasses, you know, and they all drive convertibles and they all have these perfect little coiffed wives who stay at home and make the meals and, you know, looked perfect when they get home. And you know what I mean? Like, it's very Leave It to Beaver kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And at first I'm like, I'm not getting anything out of this. Well, then they decide to add a group of female astronauts, which is an alternative history. I mean, yes, we did eventually have female astronauts, but not in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of changed the whole dynamic for me of the show. But there's been all kinds of things that have happened in the news recently that have happened on the show. And it's been kind of weird. Like, I never really paid too much attention to space stuff that much, but recently a spacecraft called Odysseus just landed on the moon, and they landed it on one of the poles mm-hmm. that's dark all the time. And they landed there because they think that there's water on the poles that they could then can make fuel from. And that this happens in the series. The New York Times just reported a piece about, can we travel to Mars? Because are humans able to endure the trauma of isolation? This happened on the show where there was a storyline about them being isolated and maybe going a little bonkers. Then the Boston Globe just reported on the strongest solar flare in 7 years coming from the sun. And this also happened on the show. Anyway, it seems like there's just lots of things going on right now that are relevant to the show. And I'm sort of loving it. But it's making me go down a rabbit hole. I've been sending you all kinds of articles and telling you that you have to watch it.
But. Well, so I have thoughts about them naming this craft Odysseus because I'm reading the Odyssey. I'm teaching the Odyssey to my students right now.
Uh-huh.
And if you've read the Odyssey, I mean, it's kind of a dicey decision to name your spacecraft Odysseus.
We're bringing this all back to books.
We're bringing it all back to books because Odysseus, you know, he goes to fight in the Trojan War, which takes like 9 years. And then it takes him another 11 years to get back home. You know, like the gods are pitted against him and Poseidon hates his guts. So like some of it is luck just not working his way. But then he does dumb stuff. Like it's like, why are you doing this? Like, I thought you're trying to get home. You're trying to get to where you're going. And he's like, squirrel, you know, like, I want to hear these people sing, you know, put beeswax in my ear, tie me to the post so I can. Anyway, it's I don't know. I have feelings about maybe Odysseus. I don't know. Like, well, are you wanting this to work well? And because I'm not sure Odysseus is the person to name it after. If you want smooth sailing, you know, if you want a smooth space adventure, you know, maybe Telemachus, because Telemachus like goes a couple places and then he does make it home. So maybe
he goes what he needs to do
and he gets home.
Yeah. Okay.
So maybe rethink that. I mean, it's too late now, but they didn't ask my opinion about what they should name this. So
there you go. No, they did not.
Do you know who Michael Threets is?
I absolutely do. I follow him on Instagram.
Okay. Well, me too.
For a while.
Yeah. So Rebecca Solnit, she's the author of Men Explain Things to Me, which is an excellent book, by the way. So she posted, this was the first I saw of it, about Michael Threets. He is the Solano County, California librarian who has a big TikTok and Instagram following. And he's very much pro-libraries. He shares stories about kids and families that come to the library. I mean, he's just one of the, like, you would not think that he would be the type of person that I would like because he's very, like,
He's a gentle soul.
I mean, I think the thing is, he tries to look on the positive side, you know, but he is resigning from his position at the library effective this week to focus on his mental health. Now, from what I've read, his mental health issues are not new. You know, he struggled with these his whole life, but there have been some boneheaded idiots making nasty comments about him on X, which is formerly Twitter, and which is like where all the douchebags hang out, I think. Anyway, just saying nasty stuff about him, you know, like, why are people so weird now and all this stuff?
This is why we can't have nice things.
Exactly. But fortunately, I mean, a lot more people came to his defense, but I suspect that that's just a lot, you know, I mean, social media, if you have all these people saying nasty things about you, even the person with the strongest mental health, that's going to wear on you. And so I think probably his life has just been a little bit turned upside down. He recently won the American Library Association's I Love My Librarian Award, and he really is a rock star. I think from his post, I did check this out, you know, he's still looking for library positions, but I think he's just kind of having to back away a little bit, which is is sad. I just wish, sad. I wish people, you know, like live and let live. If you don't like what he's about, well, just don't watch it. Don't follow him. You don't need to throw your opinion in the mix. Who cares?
He had sort of a Sesame Street and Mr. Rogers vibe to him.
Yes.
And so what's wrong with that? Why can't people be sweet and nice? I don't understand.
Because I think there's this whole cadre of people who think that that's not what a man should be, as if they are the only people who get to define what male, masculine, why do you get to determine what any of that means? Anyway, it's like, well, I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable. I think it's weird. Therefore, I have to put my opinion out into the social media universe. It's like, you know what? You don't have to share every thought that's in your stupid head.
You know, it makes me think about just social media in general and about what a double-edged sword it is, mm-hmm. because I loved seeing his posts, right? Mm-hmm. So he brought a lot of joy, and social media allowed him to bring joy. But social media is also the thing that is causing him so much angst.
Right.
Because his increasing fame, mm-hmm. I mean, he was on Good Morning America recently, right. I think.
Right.
And that increasing fame, all kinds of trolls from
they come out from under their rocks, don't they?
Yes, and are criticizing him. Mm-hmm. And if social media weren't there, they wouldn't even know about it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So
yeah.
I feel like the best and the worst.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kinda. Do you think people do this to Mr. Rogers now?
Would they? If Mr. Oh yeah. Yeah. Fred Rogers would not have been macho enough. Like, they would have criticized his sweater and the fact that his tennis shoes weren't name brand, and that he played with puppets. And the thing is, I mean, we know this, like, the people who do that kind of stuff, they're the ones that have the horrible self-image. They're the ones that have zero self-esteem. If you have to prop yourself up by making somebody else feel like garbage, you're the one with the problem. Like, we all know that, but that doesn't make it hurt any less when somebody says cruel things.
Actually, recently I saw on Facebook somewhere the picture of Julia Roberts mm-hmm. with her niece. And it was like just in their normal life. She'd had her niece over to spend the night. And there was a picture that maybe her husband took of them playing cards.
Mm-hmm.
And she posted it on her social media and thought that this was just like a sweet moment. Mm-hmm. Right. And there were all these people who felt the need to comment about how she looks horrible. She's aging so badly. Why doesn't she take care of herself? And she just thought she was posting this nice picture of mm-hmm. her family. And she said, I'm 50 years old and, you know, I shouldn't care what people think. But, you know, if you have that many people saying things about you, it's really hard not to care,
right.
you know, and not right. to let it get to you.
Right.
So you can imagine her point was like teenagers,
right.
you know, teenagers or younger people, how that affects them.
Right. So, or people who haven't, I mean, she's been in the spotlight for decades.
Right.
And, you know, for people who have this moment where they're in the spotlight and they're not used to that. I mean, you know, they don't have maybe the thickened skin that you might develop after years and years and years of sort of learning to let go. You know, well, the thing that gets me, I'm like, yeah, I want to see what these jerks who make nasty comments, I want to see what they look like on a Sunday morning, you know, right. without makeup and all this stuff. And that's the thing. Again, they're very willing to throw garbage on other people. I don't have much tolerance for that. That's also why I keep virtually everything on social media private. I'm a nobody, but you just never know.
Well, that went off on a tangent that I wasn't expecting.
I know. But anyway, we like Michael Threets and we wish him well. And those other bozos can suck it.
He's a gift to children coming to the library. And so I am hoping that he can get back to sharing his gift, you know, somewhere.
For sure. We recorded our first conversation about Michael Threets a few days ago. And, you know, the world of social media moves fast. He left the library where he had worked for a number of years. And so I was talking about him and thinking about his mental health, you know, and why he was leaving. But good things happen sometimes. And he is actually going to collaborate with PBS Kids in their social media series. So he's still going to be around promoting books, promoting reading, promoting libraries through PBS. I think that's a good fit for him.
Well, we're talking about small presses today. I wanted to mention something that I saw in the news earlier this month, which was that the Los Angeles Public Library has purchased and is now running a small press of its own called Angel City Press. And I think it's one of the only, libraries in the country who has done so. But this used to be a privately owned press. And they print mainly books that are about Los Angeles and Southern California. And the owners were retiring and were going to sell it. And they asked the library if they would be interested. And so after much thought, the library did decide to take it on because they felt like that those stories needed to be told. Mm-hmm. And if this press closed, would those stories still be told? I talk about this because I think that when we talk about our small presses today, I think about some of these wonderful books that we have read from small presses, and would we have gotten those stories without them? Mm. So anyway, we'll link to all these. We'll link to my 300 space stories. And yeah, we'll link to all this. But Carrie, I want to know what you're reading. What have you been reading?
This was not published by a small press because this author is kind of a big name. I mean, he's not kind of a big name. He's won like tons of awards. Anyway, the book is called Everyman by Philip Roth. And I had wanted to read Philip Roth for a while, mostly because when I would read books, he was mentioned a lot, you know, as being sort of a writer who does the craft well. So I picked up Everyman by Philip Roth. The protagonist of Everyman is a guy in his like 70s who's kind of whining because he had a big shot advertising job, left his first wife, and his sons never forgave him for it. He left his first wife for another woman, then left his second wife for another woman, and then realized that his third wife was kind of a big dummy, so maybe he shouldn't have done that. And he develops heart problems as he gets older, and so then he gets jealous of his brother, who's as fit as a fiddle. Anyway, like, this guy, overall, has had a pretty good life, and the parts that haven't been good has kind of been his own making, right? And so it's really hard to feel sorry for this guy because his overall life is really good. When he was in the big shot advertising job, he would get to fly to all these different places to see like ad campaigns being photographed and stuff. Anyway, so, you know, like his health problems as he's gotten older, that's just bad luck. But a lot of the stuff he's mucked up himself. So this book is kind of like white man wrote a book complaining about how hard life is for white male protagonist, right?
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I sort of disliked it because I'm like, come on, man. Like, really? Complaining? Seriously? Haven't we had like hundreds of years of books like this?
Actually, I've heard that about Philip Roth.
Yeah.
Do you think he was trying to do that intentionally?
I mean, I don't know. I did not know him personally. I do not know his feelings, his thoughts. But I guess here's the thing. Sometimes the people who whine the most don't really have anything to whine about. You know what I mean? Like, they're just kind of spoiled and they don't realize how good they have it compared to so many other people. So that was kind of annoying, right? But at the same time, like, I really enjoyed reading this book because it really, in a lot of ways, is an everyman situation, right? Like, if you're lucky enough. If you're lucky enough, you have a good job and you can screw things up in your life and still manage to live until you're in your 70s. You know, like, he's in his retirement and he's painting every day. Oh, that's terrible, right? So it's kind of like this train wreck situation. It's like a train wreck read where there's things about him you can't stand, but you can also relate to this whole getting older and your body's different and, oh crap, things start falling apart and I didn't see this coming. And it really stinks that I'm having to go to the doctor constantly, right? Because I see my own parents dealing with that kind of stuff. And you sort of wonder, like, WTF just happened? Like, what's going on? So this book won the Penn Faulkner Award. And Roth has won the Pulitzer, the Booker Prize, the National Book Award, and many, many, many others. I guess I feel like it was a good book because even though I was like, really whiny white guy, shut up, I also kept reading because it was compelling. So there you go. I don't know how you want to take that. Like, is that a 3-star? I don't know. I think I gave it a 4-star, actually. Every Man by Philip Roth.
So that was sort of a mixed review.
It was a mixed review. But again, I think I still gave it 4 stars.
It was problematic, yet interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, there you go. What about you?
So I read a book by Henning Mankell, who is a well-known Swedish mystery writer, called Italian Shoes. Now, when you were talking about Henning Mankell, you were talking about his mysteries. He's most well-known for his Kurt Wallander series.
Right.
But this book, Italian Shoes, is a standalone novel that is not a mystery at all. It's literary fiction. It's about a man named Frederick who lives on this tiny island, an archipelago off the coast of Sweden. And it's so small that he is the only resident, and his mail is delivered by boat twice a week. And he lives in this old homestead that was owned by his grandparents. And Frederick has sort of quarantined himself on this island because he's cut himself off from civilization and his profession as a surgeon because he has done something that he cannot forgive himself for. So what initially pulled me into the story, though, is the opening chapters. And in that, we see Frederick in the wintertime cut holes in the thick ice and jump in each morning just so that he can feel something.
Mm.
But one day, the postman delivers on his boat a person who is looking for him, a woman who he had a relationship with for many years. He was engaged to marry her until he went away and he never looked back. She had no idea like where he was, what happened to him. He left on a trip and then just never contacted her again, like the ultimate ghosting, right? And so she's tracked him down. She finds him. She is dying and she wants to reconnect with him and show him all that he left behind before she dies. So as Frederick is trying to repair this part of his personal life, he also decides that he needs to make amends for all the other things that he has done so that he can seek forgiveness and come to some sort of self-acceptance. This was an endearing book, but it also had some very quirky elements to it. Like there's an anthill growing in the middle of his dining room that he just sort of, he's ignored for years. And it just gets bigger and bigger till it is almost as tall as his table. Now, I know this is symbolism, you know, for Frederick's life, but it's still a very weird image that I kind of loved. I'd like to talk to somebody, you know, about it who's read this book. So I guess in some ways, this is also about a privileged white man lamenting all the bad things that he's done. I guess I see some similarities there.
Mm-hmm.
This one, he's wanting to correct that. But the name of the book is Italian Shoes by Henning Mankell.
Hmm.
I think I liked mine better than you liked yours. But it doesn't sound like your guy saw the error of his ways. I feel like the guy in my book had a redemption arc that maybe yours didn't have.
I think he did. I mean, I think he definitely, I mean, part of what he was dealing with was regret that he realized, oh man, I have screwed up in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But what can I do about it? You know, sometimes the wounds you inflict after, like, kind of the scar tissue builds up and it's not going to be an easy fix to get rid of that scar tissue.
Yeah.
So if somebody would even let you touch them and try to get rid of it to begin with, you know.
It does sound like there's some similarities between these two books.
Yeah.
You know, so very interesting. Hmm. Okay. Well, we need to get to our small presses, Carrie.
All right.
So let's take a break. But before we come back, we are going to hear about a 5-star read from a fellow book lover.
This is Amy Burnett, Mrs. Millard Fillmore Reads on Instagram from Silver Spring, Maryland. My 5-star read is Gilead by Marilyn Robinson. Gilead is narrated by small-town preacher John Ames, who reflects on his life in a letter to his young son. Gilead won the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction in 2005 and is the first of 4 companion novels in the Gilead universe. I've read and reread Gilead many times. I love the distinct voice of John Ames and the care that Robinson has taken to craft each character. I also love how the novel has changed for me as Robinson published and I read companion novels that illuminate the backstory of other characters, Lila, Glory, and Jack. My father graduated from high school in a small Ohio town in 1956, the same year this novel takes place. When he was alive, the gap between the world he grew up in and my world often led to tension and misunderstanding between us. Over the years, Gilead has helped me to better understand my father, and rereading the novel after his death was a great comfort to me. I recommend Gilead to anyone who enjoys character-driven stories, beautiful prose, and thoughtful reflections on life, love, and family.
Okay, we are back, and today we are talking about small independent presses. We have read some that have been outstanding, and when I was looking at my list of books that I have read over the years, I don't think I've read any small press books until maybe we even started this podcast or a little
really?
Bit before. Yes, as I was looking through, there were hardly any that were small presses.
Hmm.
And so I want to say how grateful I am that we are doing this podcast and we have people suggest books to us that aren't all from the traditional big five publishers, because there's some gems in there.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
So we said in the beginning that sometimes it can be hard to tell if a book is an independent press or if it's one of the big five. And this is why there are things called imprints. And when we were sort of preparing for this episode, we looked into what that means. And so, like, for instance, Plume is an imprint of Penguin Random House, and they publish LGBTQ titles. But if you just saw Plume, you might think that that's an independent press, but it's not. So all of these different publishers have smaller imprints that focus a lot of times on different kinds of genres. The way it works, it's sort of like a hierarchy. There's the publisher, and then there's the division, and then there's the imprint. So in order to make this like a little bit easier to understand, I'm going to do it from a different point of view. I saw this on an article that I thought was interesting. So like if you took a well-known manufacturer, say Procter & Gamble, that would be equivalent to saying Penguin Random House. But Procter & Gamble, they produce lots of different products that are maybe unrelated. So they have Gillette for razors. They have Luvs for baby diapers. They have Tide, their laundry detergent. These are all different things. And we know them by Tide and Luvs and Gillette. We don't know them as Procter & Gamble, but they're all products of Procter & Gamble. So that's sort of the same thing as like the publishing house and their different imprints. So anyway, I just wanted to give an idea of why some of those publishers who you think might be independent presses are really just part of a larger, one of the big five. Okay, so tell me about your first one.
Okay, I have lately been listening to, number one, a lot of audiobooks, but the audiobooks I've been listening to are from small presses. So the first one is called The Wild Hunt by Emma Seckle, and that was published by Tin House. And so this is the story of Lee, who has returned to one of Scotland's islands. So you get the sense that she's either on one of the Hebrides or the Shetlands. And so she returns after her father's death. She had gone to the mainland and now she's back. So her mother abandoned the family many years ago. And her brother lives on the mainland following his military service during World War II. So this is probably around like 1947 or so. Lee is left to tend to the house and the sheep while her brother figures out what to do with the property and with her. It's October and the Slua, like you get the sense they're like ravens, but they're actually a part of Scottish mythology. They're sort of like the restless spirits of the unhappy dead. So the Slua are there on this island and they seem to be especially menacing this year. They always come in October. So when Leah's young friend Hugo goes missing, everyone is wondering whether the Slua have taken him. Lee and her new friend, Ian McTavish, who, like her brother, served in the Royal Air Force during the war, he returned home a widower. They develop a bond from trying to determine where Hugo has gone, and they're both impacted by the Slua and what the Slua are doing to the people on the island. So it's like historical fiction, but it's also kind of like folklore. It's kind of this blend of both. I mean, the people on this island are dealing with their losses, like the children that they lost in the war, but also just even when a war is going on, people who aren't participating in the war, you know, deaths still happen. So everyone on this island is really still dealing with that grief, and not necessarily in healthy ways. If you had said to me, oh, this book's about World War II, the aftermath of World War II, normally I would be like, nah, not interested. But this, because it brought in that folklore, and again, it was taking place sort of away from where all the fighting had been, it made it a little bit new and refreshing. So I liked it. The Wild Hunt by Emma Seckle.
Very good. And Tin House is a very well-known independent press. Well, the one I'm going to talk about is from Ashland Creek Press, because I'm going to tell you a little bit about the presses that my books come from. Carrie's not going to do that because Carrie doesn't care.
Well, no. Carrie is like, if you're interested in Tin House, you've got the Google. Go use your phone or your computer and look it up.
I am more of a hand feeder, so I'm going to hand feed you.
Yes.
And the book I'm going to talk about is called Three Ways to Disappear by Katie Yoakum. It's published by Ashland Creek Press. And this is the way they describe themselves off their website. Ashland Creek Press is a vegan-owned boutique publisher dedicated to publishing books with a worldview. We're passionate about the environment, animal protection, ecology, and wildlife, and our goal is to publish books that combine these themes with compelling stories. So this is kind of a niche publisher, right? Like environmental, animals, things like that. So in this novel, it's equal parts eco-fiction and family drama. And our main character, Sarah Devon, has made a career as an investigative journalist, going into dangerous places to get the story. But she leaves all that behind to take a position with a conservation organization in northern India that's trying to preserve the Bengal tiger. Now, India is where she lived as a child with her family. Her dad was a doctor who set up medical practices in India to help the poor. But then a family tragedy occurs, and Sarah, her mother, and her sister return to the U.S. But not the father. And so even as adults, these sisters are scarred by what happened. And the only way to heal is to return to India. So as Sarah is on a quest to help save the tiger, she's also trying to save her family. There's a bit of a love story in here. It has a strong sense of place of India and the importance of activism. There was lots to like about this book, and it won the Siskiyou Prize for Environmental Fiction. And Katie Yoakum was a guest to our show very early on, season 2, episode 35. This was in the before times. This was pre-COVID. But I really, really enjoyed this book. And it has a lovely cover. It's like orange, and it has like this white and blue tiger on the front. And it's the cover's very striking. So that was Three Ways to Disappear by Katie Yoakum from Ashland Creek Press.
All right. My next one is called The Salt Fields by Stacy D. Flood. And this is from Lanternfish Press. And again, if you're interested in Lanternfish Press, go look it up. Yeah. I was like, this is so much my personality. Do you care? Because I'm not going to look it up for you. So go do your thing. All right. So this was also an audiobook listen for me. It's about protagonist Minister Peters, but he's not an actual minister. That is just his name. He wants to get out of the South and away from his home and the memories of his murdered wife and his deceased daughter. He's got a lot of just unexplored, and he's kind of stuck grief, right, that he hasn't dealt with. He boards a train and he meets three people, Carvel, Lana, and Davinion. And these characters seem friendly with good intentions, but the reader and Minister soon begin to doubt their sincerity. What do they want from Minister? Is there anything he needs or wants them for? So several events happen during the course of this novella when they get off their train at various stops. And so they stop, and it's going to be several hours before the train leaves again. And so a couple things happen, which makes Minister wonder how his life is changed by this journey. So it's kind of like he's looking back on this train trip where he was going to the north and what happened with him and these other characters. It's short, but it makes you think about, you know, the interactions you have with people, and you think that maybe they don't mean much, but they can turn into things that impact your life in major ways. So that's The Salt Fields by Stacey D. Flood.
Okay. Well, I like the name of that press. I don't know anything about it, but I just like the name of it.
I'll leave it to you. I know what you'll do. You'll go look it up.
I will. Okay. So my next one comes from Hub City Press. And actually, Hub City Press has published a couple of books that I really liked. The one I'm going to talk about today is called Whiskey and Ribbons by Lisa Cross Smith. But one of my favorite books from last year was from Hub City Press. That was the graphic memoir called Landings. A Crooked Creek Year was also done by Hub City Press. But Hub City Press, it's based in South Carolina, and it is the South's premier independent literary press. So it's focused on finding and spotlighting extraordinary new and unsung writers from the American South. And their curated list champions diverse authors and books that don't fit into the commercial publishing landscape. Now, Lisa Cross Smith has written 5 novels, with her last several being published by some of the big 5. But her very first novel, Whiskey and Ribbons, was published by Hub City Press. And actually, I think it's still my favorite of her novels. Lisa Cross Smith kind of specializes in writing cozy, romantic, literary fiction. So in Whiskey and Ribbons, our story revolves around the death of a police officer named Eamon. And this book has 3 intertwining points of view. First, there is his widow, Evie, who is 9 months pregnant when he's killed in the line of duty. And then we have Eamon, the police officer who's killed, and we get his point of view before he dies and leading up to his murder. And then finally, Dalton, who is Eamon's adopted brother, who comes to help Evie after Eamon's death and when the baby arrives. And so this novel sort of asks, what happens after a tragedy? How do you love and live after something like this? And while parts of this are definitely sad, it's also cozy and hopeful. When I say that her novels are cozy, there's a lot of coffee and tea and candles and cozy blankets. And it's all kind of just like in the background, but it makes it feel like it feels very warm, kind of like a hug, even when she's talking about things that are maybe not pleasant. So again, the name of that book was Whiskey and Ribbons by Lisa Cross Smith. What's next?
All right. So the book I'm going to talk about, I actually read this one, not listened to it. It's called Places We Left Behind, A Memoir in Miniature by Jennifer Lang. And that comes from Vine Leaves Press. So Lang is an American who met and fell in love with her French-born husband in Israel. They committed themselves to each other and to trying to build a life together around Judaism, despite their varying levels of observance. So they move their family around quite a lot. So at any given point in this memoir, they're in California, the northeast parts of the United States, France, or Israel. And during those moves, each one at any given point was giving up things for that relationship that sometimes felt unfair. And they both go through periods where they feel kind of conflicted and resentful. So at 156 pages, it is a short, uniquely designed memoir. So, you know, some of it is poems, some of it is essay form. The fonts and the styling really play with the space. So visually, it's appealing. And the story left me wanting more because in it, you know, she talks about living in Israel and how when you move there, you're given gas masks by the Israeli government in case there's attacks, which I was like, oh, wow, I wouldn't know that. So it was interesting to read about that. She and her husband trying to make their marriage work while also navigating, living in different countries and trying to raise their children as Jews. So again, it's Places We Left Behind, a memoir in miniature by Jennifer Lang.
It sounds like that one is very lyrical. Like,
yes,
when you say it's part poetry and the structure, it looks very, you know, interesting on the page.
Yes.
That's definitely something that would not get published by a traditional
publisher. Right. Absolutely.
Because it's a little different, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, but I sort of loved it. So, but I would recommend it. And I believe she has another book coming out later this year. I think from the same publisher. So
very good.
All right. What's your next one?
Well, the next one is one that I gave 5 stars to. I love this book so much. It didn't get nearly enough attention when it came out, but it's What Ben Franklin Would Have Told Me by Donna Gordon. And this is by Regal House Publishing. And Regal House is a traditional independent press dedicated in collaborative effort with its authors to the furtherance of finely crafted literature for adult, young adult, and middle grade readers. Okay, so I adore this book, and I felt so lucky that it was suggested to us because I never would have found it otherwise. This is the story of Lee. He's a 13-year-old boy who's suffering from a disease that makes him premature age. So his life expectancy is very short. And at 13, his body is already like an elderly man. And so his mother has to go to work, but he cannot be left alone. So she hires a caretaker to stay with him while she is gone. And the caretaker is named Tomas, and he is an immigrant. He fled to America after surviving Argentina's dirty war, where his wife and his child went missing. And he is still searching for them. But Lee and his mom were going to take a trip to Washington, D.C. because Lee loves history. And this may be the last trip he's ever able to take because of his health. But she's unable to go because her boss says he will fire her if she takes off more time. So Tomas takes him. And this is where the two storylines intertwine more, because while in D.C., Tomas wants to meet with some people who he think may have information about his wife and child. And at first, Lee is suspicious of Tomas, but then he wants to help him. So this is both a coming-of-age story, and it's a bit of an unusual road trip story, and it is just a fantastic book. And we interviewed Donna Gordon about this book several years ago. It was season 6, episode 136, and we'll link to that episode in the show notes. But this has just been one of those books that I still think about several years later. And this is the only book she's ever written. I hope she's going to come out with more. She's also an artist, and I get the sense that maybe right now she's focusing more on her art than her writing. But I hope she comes out with something else. Again, that's What Ben Franklin Would Have Told Me by Donna Gordon.
All right. I'm up next, and I am talking about a book of comics. You know, if you're of a certain age, you're thinking about menopause. it's called Menopause, A Comic Treatment, and it's edited by M.L. Zerwick. I hope I pronounced that right. I'm sure I'm not. And it's from Penn State University Press.
Oh, my alma mater.
Yeah, I thought you would like that. So it is a collection of comics, all related to, in some ways, menopause or the leading up to menopause or right after menopause. Menopause is something that nobody wants to talk about. The night sweats, the irritability, the dryness, the periods that come and go at the wrong time or for too long or for only a hot minute, and then they show up a week later. There's a lot going on with your body because your hormones are changing. And so this book has all these different artists address menopause in their own unique way. So one of the comics, it's a person and it's like a menopause amusement park. So all of the rides are something horrible related to menopause, you know, yeah. Or one of them, you know, it shows a woman and something about her ability to regulate her own temperature. Like, those days are over, which, you know, if you're in your 40s or 50s, you know all about this. You know, I picked it up because it's, again, you know, like, people talk about childbirth and the child rearing years and all that, like, that gets a lot of attention. But as that part of your life goes away, it's like menopause is this big secret, you know, that nobody talks about. And I liked it that these women were looking at all the different levels of feeling related to it. So it's called Menopause, A Comic Treatment. And that's from Penn State University Press.
I'm so glad that we have a university press in there, because several of the books that I thought about talking about are University Press books, but I talked about them too recently on the show. And so I didn't want to talk about them again. But, you know, I'm thinking about University of Nebraska Press has printed several that I've really liked by Erin Flanagan and Suzanne Roberts and her book, Bad Tourist. And then West Virginia University Press with Nima Avashia and her book, Another Appalachia. Anyway, University Presses put out great books. And I think people think that they just put out textbooks, and that's not the case. Okay. So anyway, go Penn State, Nittany Lions. So my next one is called Late Migrations by Margaret Renkel. This is from Milkweed Editions. And Milkweed is an independent publisher of literary fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. And their mission is to identify, nurture, and publish transformative literature and build an engaged community around it. So this particular small press has produced some of my favorite books. So when I see that they've published something, I always take a second look because I know that it will be quality. Actually, my favorite book of 2021 was from this publisher. It was World of Wonders by Amy Nezahuku-Mottl. But I talked about that one earlier this year. So they also published another favorite of mine, Late Migrations. And the author, Margaret Renkel, is an opinions columnist for the New York Times, and she has published three collections of essays. And her first collection, Late Migrations, A Natural History of Love and Loss, she tells the story of her childhood, her complicated parents, and transitions over to an adult and being a caretaker. And she weaves this into stories of the natural world and the things she observes in the green spaces around her in Nashville, where she lives. So this is very meditative, it's thought-provoking, and it's really just lovely writing. This collection also contains some beautiful illustrations that are done by her brother. Her third collection came out right before Christmas, and it's won some awards already. It's called The Comfort of Crows, A Backyard Year. And when that came out, I swiftly went and bought myself a copy for the holidays. Of course, I have not read it because
I was just going to say it's sitting on your shelf, never to be read.
Yeah, I will read it. But yes, I quickly went and bought it because I must have it. And now it's waiting for me. But you really should check out anything by Margaret Renkel, even her opinions in the New York Times. She's just so thoughtful and I just love her. So again, that's Late Migrations by Margaret Renkel.
All right.
Okay. Last one's here.
Home stretch.
Okay.
All right. So this, another audiobook. I finished Lungfish by Megan Gillis, and that is from Catapult Books. So Lungfish is about a woman named Tuck who is staying at her deceased grandmother's decrepit house on a remote island off the coast of Maine with her husband and their toddler daughter. And they're squatting for the time being because the executor of the estate is trying to locate Tuck's father, who has been more or less on the move for many years. Tuck and her brother essentially raised themselves after their mother left. Their father, who, you know, towards the end of the book, we come to realize he's likely paranoid schizophrenic. He never wanted anything to do with living a kind of a normal life. So Tuck is used to having to make do and sort of deal with hardship. But hardship looks really different when you have a young child to care for. What Tuck soon discovers is that her husband has been hiding an addiction to kratom, forcing Tuck to scavenge the island for food and make hard decisions about what the future may hold. So
what's he addicted to? Kratom? What's
kratom? So kratom, you can buy kratom just like, you can go to stores and buy kratom.
What is it?
It's, let's see, it's an herbal substance that can produce opioid and stimulant-like effects.
And you can buy it at the grocery store?
You can buy, I don't know that Kroger carries it, but you can buy it at stores. I had heard about it before, so this wasn't a new substance to me, but I didn't realize how devastating its effects can be. So of the books that I've talked about, two of them have mothers that leave the families. So I'm like, what's
there's
going
like
on?
A theme going
I,
on here.
I guess. I must be, well, unknowingly attracted to these books because I didn't need, other than the menopause book, I didn't know what any of these were about when I chose to read them. But I really enjoyed this book, Lungfish by Megan Gillis. So That's it.
Well, I am ending with something that's a little bit on the bizarre side. I am ending with a book called Tide Pool by Nicole Wilson by Parliament House Press. And I think I like their byline the most from their website. They call themselves a boutique publisher of the brilliantly bizarre. Mm-hmm. So Parliament House is a small traditional publisher working with authors to produce brilliantly bizarre, original and moving stories with an edge. They curate voicey, upmarket urban fantasy and paranormal fiction with an emphasis on uplifting marginalized voices and unconventional narratives. Okay, so Tidepool is characterized as horror, but for me, it was not incredibly scary. So if you think horror isn't your thing, still stick with me. Don't stop listening. You might be surprised. So Tidepool is a gothic dark fantasy. That's the way I would describe it, about sea monsters set on the shore of Maryland. It's 1913, and our protagonist, Sorrow Hamilton, is in her 20s, lives in Baltimore with her wealthy father and older brother, Henry, who she adores. Her father named her Sorrow because her mother died in childbirth. So she and her father have never been close because her father still holds it against her. But her brother, Henry, has really been her best friend and confidant. So her father sends Henry to a small coastal town called Tidepool to see if he can interest the townspeople in developing their community to become a seaside tourist destination like Ocean City, Maryland. But Henry never returns. So Sorrow decides to sneak out in the middle of the night against her father's wishes to travel to Tidepool herself to find her brother. And when she gets there, she finds a desolate, dark place that smells like dead fish, and the whole town has a shabby and depressed look and feel about it. Once in Tidepool, she finds that all the townspeople are uncooperative in trying to help her find her brother, and there are two people who seem especially odd. Widow Ada Oliver and her brother Quentin. They live in this huge mansion on the hill over the town, and Sorrow comes to find out that there's something seriously sinister in the basement that makes squishy noises when it walks. So Sorrow must figure out what to do next, especially since the townspeople seem to be actively working against her. Will she ever be able to leave Tidepool? So, and I know this says it's a horror book and there are monsters, but to me it was more freakish than scary. It had sort of the feel of like a series of unfortunate events film. That weird, scary things are happening, but it feels sort of fantastical. So think of like a Creature from the Black Lagoon crossed with a series of unfortunate events. This was Nicole Wilson's debut novel. She was nominated for a Bram Stoker Award for it for Best First Novel. But she has a new book coming out in November that is YA horror called The Keeper of the Keys, which is supposed to have some Haunting of Hill House vibes to it. Mm-hmm. And it is also being published by Parliament House. So I can't wait for that one.
Cool.
So again, the name of this is Tidepool by Nicole Wilson. There you have it. So I'm really glad that we did this episode, though, because it made me think back about how many small press books that I have enjoyed in the last 5 to 10 years. And they might be a little bit harder to find, but they're no less satisfying.
Absolutely.
Well, I hope that people will look up some of these books and, you know, maybe explore their own bookstore or library for some small press reads. I want to remind everyone, I want to do more book recommendations. So if you're looking for a book, send me a message. You can find me on Instagram, on our Facebook page, or you can go to our website and click the contact button and let me know what you're looking for. And happy reading, everyone. See you next week. For show notes for any episode, go to our website at perksofbeingabooklover.com. We're also on Instagram at Perks of Being a Book Lover Pod and on Facebook at Perks of Being a Book Lover. To send us a message, and I hope you do, go to our website and click the contact button.
Another thing Amy hopes you do is leave us a positive review on your favorite podcast platform to help other book lovers find us. She is so eager to get book recommendations from you, your friends, your grandma, your cousin, your dog, your cousin three times removed, whatever. So, you know, let other people find us. Share your positive reviews.
Finally, a huge thank you to Forward Radio 106.5 FM, a grassroots community radio station in Louisville, Kentucky. You can find our show there live or in archives at forwardradio.org.